Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I've got one word to say to you.
Look at me.
G'day. I'm Rowdy Walden and welcome to Look at Me, the podcast. Join me and a myriad of special acquaintances as we celebrate the hilarious Kath and Kim. Unofficially, of course. It's going to be...
Yeah, it's nice. It's different. It's unusual.
That's right. Let's get into it. Well, well, well. Look what the cat dragged in. I'm so sorry that I've been away. I've been off at Hyatt Coolum for a bit of R&R. But I'm back. We're looking at the last of the franchise, the movies. Joining me is Kath and Kim fanatic, radio presenter, and the meme queen herself, Abby Lenton. But before we get into it, I think I need to address the elephant in the room, the reunion. Now, personally, I'm super excited. There's been a bit of a buzz and a bit of a, like, rumoured speculation about this potential will-they-won't-they reunion for years now. And it's finally happening. There was goss that they were filming last month in Melbourne. So, what's it going to be? What do you think? Let me know your thoughts. Slide into the DMs. I'm hoping to do a whole episode on the reunion down the track when it comes out. But for now, let's get into it. Well, joining me is Abby Boots Lenton. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
First off, I need to see this Kath and Kim tattoo.
Oh my God. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
It's going to be quite elaborate because it's on my ankle. Can you see that?
Oh my God, it's a Yipoon pineapple.
It is a pineapple with two chopsticks in it, a la Waiting for Telstra.
That's the best Kath and Kim tattoo I've ever seen.
Thank you. I can't believe that it was like 1 second in an episode and I looked at it and I thought, you know what? I want that on my body forever.
For the rest of my life. Well, I made a promise that if I could ever get anyone from the show on this podcast that I would get a Kath and Kim tattoo, but neither of those things have happened yet.
Oh my God, maybe get them to draw it. Maybe that's what you need to do.
Oh, I feel like that's a bit too far. I feel like I'll be like, come on the podcast and they'll say yes. And then I'll be like, now you have to draw me this tattoo.
Be in my life forever.
Welcome to Look At Me. This is your first journey here on the show. And we're going to talk about probably the most controversial Kath and Kim movies in the franchise. Mm-hmm. The Kath and Kim Code and Kath and Kimderella.
Mm-hmm.
Why have you decided to take this big burden on?
I think that the films demonstrate the full spectrum of the Kath and Kim experience, that being the highest high of highs and highs, that is the Kath and Kim Code, and the bless but plummeting lows, that is the Kath and Kimderella.
Well, look.
Is that too controversial?
It is controversial because have you rewatched Kath and Kimderella lately?
I did today in preparation. So I'd only seen it in cinemas when it came out. Haven't touched it for however many years and just today.
Is that because you thought it was so bad? You're like, fuck, I can never look at that again.
I just didn't need a second viewing. I think that I was like, all right, good, good on them. I'm going to give them their box office money, but I don't need to kind of contribute to my great love affair. However, I did see the Kath and Kim Derella film in cinemas. I remember at the time I wrote in to some like Sydney Morning Herald competition and I went to the red carpet or the pink carpet to watch it.
Oh my God. How old were you?
I think I was like maybe 12 or 13, and there's this footage of me coming out of the cinema, and I think they would have filmed it for the ads, and the ads went on to play for like another 6 weeks. And I'm one of the people that are like, it's so good, you have to see it, lying through my teeth at 12 years old, dressed up as Kath.
Yeah, but you know what? You just proved that you knew what content was. Mm-hmm. You were like, I'll give them the soundbite they want.
Oh my God, absolutely. And I was like, hey, can I have your boss's number?
And they didn't give it
Not
to you.
Not at all. They said earn it.
Should we start with the Kath and Kim Code?
Yes.
Thoughts?
Okay. I think it's marvelous. I honestly probably think that it's probably the thing I come back to the most because it's just like a full throttle dose of Kath and Kim in an hour and a half. I think what makes it really good is that it is a telly movie. So it didn't have the bells and whistles that we will inevitably get into with Kath and Kim Dorella, but it did have so much heart and it did have that level of something special going on that you knew that it was a film. And importantly, it's a Christmas film. So I watch it every year.
Okay. My family do the same. It's our Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. It's our Die Hard. It's our Grinch.
Absolutely. I'm not fucking with Elf.
And it's silly. It's so silly.
I think that's what's so delicious about it as well. Because like you've got things like it took reference from the Da Vinci Code. Both like the great text and also most likely the Tom Hanks film. And it was just like, why did they pick that? But I think they really pulled it off.
Well, I think like everything in Kath and Kim, it's like such a reference to the time.
Mm.
And that book was massive at the time.
So I've been quoting like Opus Dei, not knowing at all what it is. And I'm like, oh yeah, Barry Humphries was so good in that film.
He's so good. He's so good. Also, the cameo of Michael Bublé.
Mm.
Just this mix of like things that were like so important to our culture at the time.
And I think that Michael Bublé's cameo is probably the best executed of the international names. That's controversial because Kylie really put a whole all into that thing. But I remember hearing at the time that Michael Bublé watched Kath and Kim on a flight and said, oh, can I be a part of this? This is amazing.
Really?
And then they wrote him in because it was at his request. And I think, of course, he was playing at Carol's. Of course, Kath is in love with him and Kel is jealous. It was just the most seamless pairing of a celebrity who wanted to be a part of it and had the weight that they could throw behind that. And also just the most immaculate plot. But I think Kath and Kim Dorella went down the lens of like, everything is a fairy tale, bibbidi bobbidi boop. It was absolutely mad, not based anyway in the natural world. Whereas I think that the Kath and Kim Code did a really special thing where it was equally as absurd and equally as unrealistic, but grounding it in the fact that he came all the way from the Vatican just to get them to be franchisees, brought it back down to the universe that we know as Kath and Kim.
It felt more a part of the world, especially the way that it was filmed.
Mm.
Like it just felt like a really long episode of Kath and Kim as mm-hmm. opposed to what Kath and Kim Dorella looks like, feels like.
For sure. And it had the shaky cam. It didn't have that Technicolor grading of the second film. It honestly just was the same production and crew giving you something a little bit longer. And I think that that's where it really succeeded. It pulled out all the stops in the sense that it was a bit special and it was a bit Christmas. But I think that they probably just pulled all the gags from any other episode and didn't necessarily feel the need to escalate it and to appeal to a wider audience. I think they were just appealing to their already massive but very loyal Australian audience.
I think less so than Kath and Kim Dorella.
Really?
I feel like it's Kath and Kim Dorella is just a repeat of every joke
mm.
from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like it starts at the exact same place that season one, episode one starts at.
Mm-hmm.
Kim comes home, she's broken up with Brett. Kath is going on another date with Kel. Like it feels like the whole story is starting again, but you know, 10 years later.
Yeah. And most of that film is a montage. It's honestly just like shot changes and a bit of music in the background. But my biggest takeaway from Kath and Kim Dorella watching it today was that I think that a very, very sophisticated AI wrote Kath and Kim Dorella after watching hours and hours of Kath and Kim.
Okay, please explain.
Because of that regurgitation of jokes, I think that it had all of the hallmarks of what we like and what we think is funny, but just spat in really quick succession without that interplay or without earning it the way that we were used to. So they'd be like, oh, that's over, OVAH. And I'm like, what's over? What's just happened to set that up? It was just them kind of churning through in this one, like 30-minute long establishing montage and didn't get us to earn anything.
Yeah, I mean, even the scene where they're planning Kim's wedding, they're doing the same joke where they're like planning out who's going to sit at what table. And it's like, yeah, we've seen them do this before.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it has a lot of redeeming features. It has all the elements that I want from the franchise. It has Kath dancing. It has the pun humor where like they're saying things wrong, like Papilloma.
Mm-hmm. Vajazzle.
Vajazzle. And it has the fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the things to me that are like the key parts of the cake that make up Kath and Kim for me.
Is it original and does it, you know, break new ground? No. But it was so far down the track from the series that it kind of felt like, where else would they have gone?
There was definitely fan service there, I agree. I think that it was pushing and pulling between trying to pay homage to the loyal audience that they'd had, but also it felt like it was trying to open up to new audiences because it kind of reestablished the plot from the beginning again in a way that it didn't necessarily need to if it was just harking back to the same audiences. I do agree, though. I think that the silly little voices and I think that the silly little outfits are bang on. And it was a bit startling because we weren't used to seeing them shot through such exquisite camera techniques and such a high budget. There was nothing about it that felt quintessentially 2002 ABC. But I think that that is very fine and very necessary because there was a production budget behind it and because the audience was aware of that. But I do think, though, the true magic of Kath and Kim is not so much about the silly voices and the costumes, but in fact, the witticisms and the cadence of the dialogue is actually really nonchalant. I think that the way that the whole franchise and production works is this balance of exuberance and nonchalance, which are contradictory words, but the costumes are exuberant and you're getting really caught up in them, but the dialogue has this really quick cadence where these punchlines are thrown away and they catch you off guard. I don't think that the film does that. I think that the film ruminates in its own cleverness a bit too long.
It does hang on the jokes a lot more, yeah. I also think that, like, the thing that we've come to discuss a lot on this podcast is that, like, it looks and feels like us. And you're right, the movie looks like some sort of, you know, completely different world. Would you have loved it more if it was filmed in the same way as the show?
I honestly think that if it just felt a little bit less high production, I might have got around it a bit more. But even just in terms of like the fundamentals of comedy, which, like, you know, what do I know? But the way that comedy is usually written, it's like mad people in a real world or real people in a mad world. And I think that Kath and Kim does that so well because they're obviously absurd, but it really captures suburban Australiana. But these absurd Kath and Kim characters are in this absurd setting of Papilloma, Italy, but they're both absurd in different ways. And so I don't think that they ever had that opportunity for push and pull because everything was mad and there was no kind of Brett to ground it or to roll their eyes. There was no shop assistant to be like, you're absurd. And so I think that it didn't have that kind of cutting satire that we look for in Kath and Kim and so love in Kath and Kim because we see ourselves and we also see ourselves being knocked down a peg. This just felt really bombastic in every sense of the word. To Kath and Kim, Dorella should have been a touring live show pantomime. That's what it should have been.
A little panto.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that makes me really love Kath and Kim, Dorella, it is a bloody camp movie. The costumes, the sets, the setting of the whole story arc is fucking weird. It's so camp. They're ending up in this, like, part of the world that, by the way that they've painted the characters and made them exist, like, a real queer mecca.
Dorella goes in on it really hard.
Yeah, I was just about to bring this up. I was like, I think the thing that we are like both agreeing on is that it doesn't progress the narrative any further, except in the part for Sharon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And that's got so much about Magda.
Discuss. I've got so many thoughts.
Okay. So I think that it in many ways felt like it had to respond to Magda's career and public standing, because probably at the time the film came out, Gina Rowley and Jane Turner were still known pretty much just for Kath and Kim, but Magda's star was hugely on the rise. She'd just done a Jenny Craig campaign, which is why they address her like fluctuating weight within the first 30 seconds of the film. But more importantly, I think she'd quite recently come out. And I think that it does this thing where it circles back on every joke it's ever made before Magda was out publicly and perhaps to her castmates, and bringing back the Magda playing golf with Katie and Ellen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
To suddenly in this film reading their autobiographies and they're all stacked up on her night table as she kind of wanders off to sleep, or then more explicitly literally screams, "Somebody get me out of the closet." I think that it is just this really satisfying nod to both what was happening in real life, but also really entered a very
what was happening
big
in Australia.
Yeah.
I think that this whole show, and maybe it's why the show does resonate with queer people, is because it has always had some type of camp production or even queer storylines. But she, in the end of Kath and Kim Dorella, she ends up with a date as a woman, but she is also like ricochet flirting with Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe she's our bisexual icon.
I honestly think she is. I think that Sharon, just anything that floats her boat, really. I think that there's been so many clues the entire time. Also at the end, somebody says that they, like a character that's been gay throughout the entire film, says that they recognize Kel, and he's like, well, I was in the Navy. So it even harked back to Kel's kind of queer coding storylines and everything as well. And I think that, like you mentioned, the show strikes such a chord with the queer community. And I think that they probably knew that at the time because, you know, they were in really progressive circles in Melbourne when they met. But I think that by the time Dorella came out, they really knew how much this show meant to this community. And they really wanted to almost say thank you and bring to the forefront just how important this community was to these people.
Yeah, I also think like that period of Australian life was probably, you know, a lot rougher for the queer community. I don't know, maybe Papaloma was a representation of that. Maybe I'm reading too far into that.
No, I think that decadence there is really important. And I think, God, it would have been such a good touring musical. It would have been such a good panto. But I think that, you know, by having, is Rupert Everett is one of the characters, isn't he? I believe he's like the man that is with the prince or the king or whatever, but just like another kind of like classic queer icon. There's just sort of so many nods to this community and so many nods in Papaloma specifically. And Prude and True coming along and like having a go and being so like overtly liberal, I don't think was ever really addressed in the show. Obviously, we knew that they were, you know, from Toorak and they were from that kind of thinking, but they explicitly
women,
kind of said that they were Liberal Party voters. And so I think it just went really hard in on that division and it really firmly took a side.
Mm. Maybe that's why it wasn't a success. Maybe Australia was like not far progressed along that people were like, oh, this is too gay.
That's such an interesting shout. And I'd be intrigued to see whatever comes of this reunion. I hope that they will really speak about the themes and speak about what they were thinking and speak about the audiences that have held this show up, not just at the time, but 20 years later. You know, when people are like, oh yeah, I loved that show. Or like, oh yeah, I just got back into that. Everyone's talking about it at the moment. I'm like, when did we stop talking about it?
Thank you. When the hell did we stop talking about it?
Straight up. It's always been that good. And the funny thing is, like, I, a couple months ago, was the editor of Netflix Australia's social team. So I was one of the minds behind the Kath and Kim memes and social content and stuff. And it was so fun. Obviously, it'd been on Netflix for a few years before I got into that post, but I didn't have to kind of like watch it to rejuvenate my love of it or to rejuvenate my jokes. I was like, nah, this is just my rotation.
I think if you see any good Kath and Kim meme, you can guarantee that it's been made by you.
Put that quote on my gravestone.
Absolutely. There's a lot of shit Kath and Kim memes about, but every time I look at one, I'm like, oh, I bet this was Abby. This is perfect. It was Abby. I think we can both agree that the Kath and Kim code is a little perfect time capsule that we don't want to fuck with.
Mm-hmm.
And it will always hold a special place in our heart. But what about Kath and Kim Dorella? What would have been your pitch? What would you have done?
If I weren't to have done it with that exact plot, but as a theatre production, if I had to make a film, I think that I would have kept it in Fountain Gate, which would have been hard because that would have been a bit to wrap your head around to see that level of high production on these kind of like normal settings and situations that we've already seen. And also by the time Dorella came around, the actual house had been renovated. So even what was existing had already changed.
The movie does not pick up where the last episode leaves.
No.
So there's a big like, you know, if you were going to try and continue the thought, there's a big moment where you've kind of got to fill in what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that was part of the creative to just go, actually, let's retell this same story in a different way.
I just had this moment, and this is just my pitch. I just pulled this out of my whale-tailed G-banged ass. I would have explored the plot where Kath goes to prison for being one stressed bigamist. I think that that would have been really fun because obviously it harks back to when Gary Poole told her that they were actually still married, even though he ran off with Wendy the pool model and went to Honkers. They kind of signed the divorce papers or something, but I would have harked back to that moment and said something's actually gone wrong. And I would have placed Kath in some, maybe this is extremely insensitive, but like some really hyperbolic prison where that would kind of let them parody and play instead of with the Da Vinci Code, which they do so well, or instead of with Cinderella. Was it Prisoner?
I think what you're trying to say is that you just want to see Kath as a cast member on Wentworth.
Yes, I honestly do. She'd be so good at it. But I think that that kind of lets them play with a really absurd setting and absurd characters that they kind of needed that Hollywood budget to do. But I think it still kind of grounds it in what could exist in a very stretched version of reality, but reality nonetheless.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think it's the like going to Italy thing that was just so random.
Mm.
And like I get the like princess fairy tale thing, but like imagine Kath and Kim in the Outback or mm-hmm. like Hike Coolum is like one of my favorite episodes because it's, you know, it's putting them out in the open with other people.
Yeah.
Maybe Kath continues her journey to finding out what her race is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's so funny because those episodes are from season 4, which is obviously when it was picked up from ABC to Channel 7. And you could kind of tell that the production had upped its ante for that final season. And yet I'm of the firm belief that some of the strongest episodes in the entire show are in that season, a la Kath finding out her ancestry, a la the Hyatt Coolum. But it shows that they can still work with a bigger budget and higher expectations, but still keep it really grounded. And I think that a plot like that, like, yeah, Kath finding herself, Kim coming along with her, has a lot of legs.
It might be a little bit offensive, but, you know, I feel like the humor always manages to like punch up, not down.
Mm.
You know, maybe we'd find ourselves looking back and watching it more often if it felt more reflective of us. Like I've never been to Papilloma and I'm never going to go.
Absolutely. I couldn't if I tried and God knows I have. Because even if you think of like the very impetus of the To Kath and Kim Code is them returning from Italy, returning from Vatican City, and the story kicks off from there. So there is that kind of like Kath and Kel are very worldly element. There are those kind of references to a foreign land, but it's grounded in reality. So them kind of then eventually going to Italy and taking us with them, like Kath's already been. And also, what's up with Kel suddenly not being able to fly? The man is a man of the world.
Oh, God. That was not explained at all,
mm-hmm.
was it?
Mm-hmm. And, like, he's also like, oh, I can't come into the airport. They had their honeymoon at an airport.
Right. Yeah, there are so many plot holes in it, but I think that that's just so Kath and Kim, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
His excuse for not wanting to go is that MasterChef's on, which I know was such an important part of Australian life and culture for a while. But as if you turn up the opportunity to go because of MasterChef.
Why didn't they make him a contestant on MasterChef then?
Yeah. Or like just say that he had to work at the shop or something. Or like mm-hmm. go back to the Bass thing where he like had to do his tax or something. I don't know. It just felt like a really weak premise to get them over there.
I agree. But again, they didn't need one. They just were like, yep, that'll do. Let's slap it together and head on down.
I love that you think they just slapped that together.
Did they not?
I think they probably spent a long time writing it.
I don't think they spent a long time developing the storyline and plot points.
Are you looking to get a hit put out on you?
No, this is me being like, actually, if you are coming back, just put me in the writer's room, babe. I honestly, but I'm The reason I'm coming in so negative, and I contacted you before we did this episode and I was like, I'll talk about the second film, but honey, it doesn't show the full, like my full love of it. But I think it does because it means so much to me and I'm such a nerd about it.
Yeah.
That I can like identify those issues and those sticking points.
Yeah. I think it's only because we love it that we care. I always ask people who they align themselves with, a little bit like Sex and the City.
Mm.
Who are you?
I think I'm a bit too soft to be Kimmy, which maybe not because I've just going in on to Kath and Kimderella.
Kath and Kimderella, she is fucking nasty.
Yes.
She's so nasty.
Irredeemably. And I think that that threw me because upon first watch of anything that Kim is in, you think that she's nasty, but there's actually such a sense of warmth and it's loyalty.
Oblivious. Yeah. And obliviousness about mm-hmm. her. Like she's kind of saying these lines that are, yes, they're heated, but they're also not the worst thing.
I think the only line that I thought, oh, that's just quintessential Kath and Kim was like when they were looking at all the people in the village and Sharon was like, oh, they're so starving and tired. And Kim was like, well, me too. And I'm in platforms. Like that is Kim, you know, doesn't know her standing in the world, is both the best person on the planet and also the biggest victim. But that's how she sees herself. But everything else is just said with so much vitriol. I'm like, where did my girl go?
I know. It felt really off, didn't it? It was like, every time she said something, I was like, oh.
Mm.
Sorry. Okay. So you're not Kim because you're too soft.
Yeah. I think that there's this kind of like nurturing element to Kath that I really get around. I think she's a big mother hen. I think that she's got a lot of love to give and receive. I think that her hair is her clowning glory and absolutely same.
You have great hair.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, not a Leo, but almost.
Glory. So who does that leave?
I think I'm potentially a Kath, if not Sharon, because red hair, no friends.
Red hair, no friends. I think you've got friends.
And I think Sharon does
people
too.
People also call me Kath and I just don't see it.
You don't see it? Why don't you see it for yourself?
I think she's a bit daggy and I don't want to be daggy. I want to be cool.
Daggy's a word I really align with. When I get out on that dirty, dirty D floor, I'm like, you know, I've got the whole like two left feet going on. I'm feeling very free in all my Kathness.
You know what we should do? A Kath and Kim club night where it's just the music from Kath and Kim. Like the basement of the Imperial.
Because it's going to be like a combination of both like Kylie Minogue's classic hits and then also kind of like synthy production music.
Yeah. It's just you and I dancing.
And it's just going to be like, and that, because they had the most like kind of like club night house music tracks. But you know what we should do and why we should do it at the Imperial is we should serve those cocktails like they had at Kat's Hens party. And then she kind of like dances drag queens and like, what's in them? Gold.
I don't think we've ever had a better idea than this.
And you know what? We can wear just like a shirt with one sleeve because that'll save money on fake tan.
And in this economy, there's no time, there's no money to be wasting.
Look, I'm not a pretty face.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
I'm sure that people are listening, either nodding in agreement and their neck is sore or we've ruffled some feathers.
I know. I came in a little bit spicy, but I do it with so much love.
So much love.
So much love.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll see you soon.
And that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Please hit follow if you want to be notified for future episodes, which obviously you do. And if you can be bothered taking time out of your very busy schedule, chuck us a review. 5 stars, please. I'm Reddy Walden, and you'll be hearing from me next week. Hooroo.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.